Made possible in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff at The Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for joining us today. The host of the Midnight Special is our guest this afternoon. Rich Warren is here to talk about music and share some of the music that's captured his attention recently. You can hear Rich and the Midnight Special every Saturday afternoon here on AM 580. The show, featuring folk music with a sense of humor, begins at 2 p.m. here on WILL. And you can find more information about the Midnight Special on the show's website, www.midnightspecial.org. We'd like to hear from you this afternoon. Your questions and comments are invited. You can join the discussion with a telephone call. If you're in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. If you're outside the local dialing area, and it would be a long-distance call, use the toll-free number 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Rich, good afternoon. Good to see you.
Good afternoon. Great to be here.
It was August last we talked, I believe.
And it seems like I have 200 more CDs since then.
Yeah.
They come about 20 a week, or at least. It's the post office, I'm a celebrity where I live because the mailbox is so, they have to give me lockers every day with stacks of CDs in them.
Yeah.
And I just returned from the Northeast Regional Folk Alliance Conference, which we finally call NERFA, which is held in the Catskills about 90 miles north of New York City every November. And before that, I was up at the Midwest Conference, which they call FARM for Folk Alliance Region Midwest. And before that, I was down in Austin, Texas for the Southwest Regional Folk Alliance Conference, hearing a lot of remarkable people. The vitality of this music continues to amaze me. There are so many talented people doing such a terrific job in writing and performing that I never get bored with this music. There's always something new and different and exciting. And I just get knocked over by these people because there's like one guy in the Southwest who accompanies himself on clarinet and sings and plays guitar. And he sort of fuses folk and jazz and hip-hop into a unique style that just boggles the mind. There are just remarkable people. We'll be hearing a new singer-songwriter I've discovered. Her name is Anais Mitchell. She pronounces it Anais, even though it's like Anais Nin is the spelling. And she is from Vermont, 23 years old. I predict she'll be the next Ani DiFranco. She is a remarkable songwriter, a good singer, and just unbelievable songs. And when she performed at the Northeast Conference this past weekend, the audience was just flabbergasted at her songwriting talents. She's just remarkable and completely shy and not at all, you know, coming out as a big ego kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the quality of these people are truly remarkable. And the other thing about these conferences that gives me such faith in this music, this is held in an old Jewish resort, and it's a vast complex called Kutcher's. And the lobbies are vast. It must be 2 miles of lobbies and lounges and things. And every nook and cranny, people are gathered in circles, sharing songs, making music together. It could be bluegrass in one corner, Cajuns in another corner. They're doing old ballads in a third corner. And one group of about seven or eight people was doing Stan Rogers' Barrett's Privateers. And the minute they ended, somebody else walked over and started doing the parody of Barrett's Privateers. It just keeps bubbling up. And as I've said in some of my posts to friends in the folk music community, it was like being in a hot tub with 800 of your best friends. it's just that intimate and that comfortable and that enjoyable. And it makes me really proud and happy to be part of this community and be able to share this music, to be the conduit from these people to the listeners on the radio. And it's always an honor to be on your program and reach people I wouldn't ordinarily reach with the Midnight Special. And it's such a joy doing the program because every week when I sit down to plan the show, I have these stacks of CDs, and it's a lot of work to go through them all and listen. But every time I find a gem of a song, some of which I'll be sharing with your listeners this afternoon, I just get so excited. I can't wait to get the show on the air because the song just really turns me on. And even with the it's funny because I also am responsible for the technical aspects of my show, and I'm always upgrading my computer and all this kind of thing to record the discs to do the show. And so it's a full-time job just creating and preparing the Midnight Special in our Folk Stage concert series in Chicago, where a lot of these people come and do one-hour concerts for, live on the air. So it's really very exciting, and I'm just coming back from this conference all wound up and juiced, and can't wait to get on the air Saturday night and share some of the things I brought back with people because it was so exciting.
Yeah. Now, these three different conferences, do they have different flavors?
Yeah, they sort of do. And then there's an international conference, which is held once a year in February. And this year, it has in the past floated around. This year it's in Montreal, and in 2006 it'll be in Austin, and then it moves to Memphis. And each one has a different flavor, definitely a different flavor. The Texas, even though people come from all over the country to go to these regionals, there's always the Northeast Conference is very heavy in singer-songwriters with a very strong Bostonian and Philadelphia access. Boston and Philadelphia are being the two capitals of singer-songwriters in the Northeast. And then you go to the Southwest one, you'll hear more influence of a little more pop music influence, a little more sometimes Spanish music influence, Mexican kind of things. And Southerners who have a very different style. Some of the songwriters are more like Flannery O'Connor, you see. It's a whole different style of songwriting than the people up in New England who are writing songs. So there is a difference, and I guess maybe to the outsider it might all seem to be the same, but it's not. There are subtle differences, and that's what makes it even more interesting is hearing people who come from South Carolina, North Carolina, and Mississippi performing songs at the Southwest Regional, and then hearing the people from Philadelphia and Boston and Vermont performing in the Northeast Regional. And then the international attracts people from all over the world, so you get a lot of British, Irish, Scottish, as well as American and Canadian. And, of course, the Canadian scene is absolutely vibrant, and especially when we hold a conference in Canada like it'll be in Montreal in February, you get a really nice taste of both the Anglo-Canadian and, of course, the French-Canadian. And being in Montreal, I'm very excited about that because all these terrific groups like Matapat and Le Vent du Nord and La Bottine Souriante and all these terrific French-Canadian groups just add so much energy to the mix. And even at the Northeast Regional, we had Matapat performing, and they are a great Quebec group. And then there's this Canadian group called Tanglefoot of five big, hairy guys who do historical songs with an energy that if they ever have a power failure in the Northeast again, just plug these guys into the grid, and without any electric instruments, they'll light up 500 square miles because they're so energetic and lively. So it's really quite I go and get rejuvenated at these conferences. It's really an amazing event.
Now, do you sleep during these things, though?
I actually do sleep. I try to go to bed by 1 in the morning, but most of the musicians stay up all night.
Yeah.
It's amazing. At 4 in the morning, there are still people making music. And you come down in the morning sometimes for breakfast, and there are still people making music. And that's the other thing is people truly love this music. And I don't think any other genre of music has quite the same organic and continuous nature. I would suspect even jazz conferences don't quite have people improvising in the hallways with their saxophones and everything at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I know from classical events that when you have a classical music conference, string quartets do not set up in their hotel rooms and perform for everybody. And in these conferences, people who know each other will suddenly start playing together because somebody says, hey, can you play a lead guitar behind me? And the person picks it up right away, or is a bass player floating around. And like there's two guys who are both remarkable guitarists and bass players who met a couple of years ago and suddenly started playing together. And now they're sort of a part-time duet, a guy named Jim Photoglow and a fellow named Freebo. And Freebo is famous because he was Bonnie Raitt's first bass player for the first 5 or 6 years of her career. And he was in a good part responsible for the sound that she created that made her so successful. He's a remarkable bass player. These people come to these events and they just love to be with people. And we even had a special showcase at this particular event for radio DJs to choose the performers they wanted other radio DJs to hear. So we invited a group of performers that we liked for our peers to hear. And it was really neat sharing this because I discovered a whole bunch of new people I'd never heard before and who came at the recommendation of DJs I respect, like Gene Shea, who does the folk show in Philadelphia. And just hanging out with my radio peers, people who do the shows in New York City and Philadelphia and et cetera, is also a thrill because we all have similar but different tastes. So we all kind of hang out and talk about the issues about censorship and how much rock and roll our station manager may make us play. In my case, none, but in other people's cases, much. And one fellow who was doing the folk show in Detroit for 20 years in WDET got fired 3 weeks ago with no notice because they want to do all rock. They all want to do American adult contemporary. And he just got picked up by a large Ann Arbor public station, so he's back on the air. But those are the frightening things to folk people. Even though his ratings were higher than anything else on the station, they wanted a continuous format. So every station's different. We all have these different things in the folk music community. But it's just exciting, and I wish more people could get into hearing this music, because it's lyrically – I mean, I always choose the lyrically oriented things. You can have somebody else from the folk community on here and playing bluegrass and intricate – in fact, coming to Cranert Wednesday, I think, is Andrea Zahn and the woman who founded Compass Records, whose name just – Allison Brown. And they are remarkable musicians, I mean, in a classical sense, but they play kind of a folk – jazz kind of a fusion sound that's really terrific. And so it's a whole nother category of this music.
Yeah.
And so I just get excited by the diversity of it all. And what I generally bring to share with you and your listeners are some of the best songwriters who have the strongest lyrics, because that's what really gets to my soul the strongest, and what I play in the Midnight Special. And so anytime you want to hear some music.
Yeah, well, we're going to do that in just a minute. It's just really good to see you all revved up. And I know that you're a passionate guy about this music. But now today you're really on, and I'm very excited. So let's introduce again us to this person that you just discovered.
Well, this young woman is from Vermont, and she's 23 years old. It turns out her father is an English professor, so I guess she has a leg up on writing to begin with. And her name is Anais Mitchell, although, as I said, actually it should be Anais, but she calls herself Anais. And she has this new CD, her second CD, on Waterbug Records. And she mixes political content in with some really strong songwriting and making some very powerful songs. And here's a song I think listeners will pick up on what she's saying pretty clearly. She actually went and spent 3 months in Syria as part of her college, a student exchange thing or something like that, and found a Syrian who could speak the Iraqi dialect of Arabic and had him help her write the verse that you're going to hear that's in Arabic. And so I think it's a very powerful song because she did that, and most songwriters would never even think of doing that. And so let's listen to Anais Mitchell.
Full of houses.
go.
That song just tears me apart. I mean, to look at this world through the eyes of a child, and, you know, that my daddy doesn't tell me why we're in danger, that they hate us, and they might even hate me, and it just gets it down to the raw essentials of what it's all about. It doesn't have to talk about any specific place or time. Is that you're a child, and you don't know why things are going wrong, but it's scary.
Mm. And this is from the CD, Hymns for the Exile.
Yeah, there's not a bad song on that CD. She's just brilliant. And they all have slight political overtones. There aren't many basic Moon June love songs in her repertoire. There's a few love songs, but most of them have some sort of subtle political overtone, some more blatant than others. She has a song about 1984 that arrived 20 years late. And there's some very interesting material on the CD. It's on the Waterbug label, which is a former Chicagoan. Andrew Calhoun runs the label. He's in Portland now. And she also has a very interesting website, which is the spelling of her name, anaismitchell.com, where she has some of her poems and prose up on her website and some ramblings about her feelings about things. But fascinating performer. And the neat thing about these folk conferences is not only, like, I saw her on the main stage, which is a, you know, very elaborate performance hall, but then you go into these hotel rooms at night, and there are the performers sitting in a chair, and you're on the bed in the hotel room 3 feet from the performer with a whole bunch of people gathered around listening to them perform without a PA, without lights, anything fancy, just singing. And you know somebody's good when you're three feet from their nose and they're doing a great job performing.
Has anybody tried to document what goes on at these conferences and, you know, put it either in a radio documentary in an audio kind of form or in a film version?
I don't think so, but they really should. It's a shame they haven't. In fact, they had the conference, the international conference in Washington, D.C. about 8 or 9 years ago, and they were hoping NPR would come over and cover it, but they just said, no, folk music is not interesting. So NPR's attitude is jazz and classical stuff is more their cup of tea than folk music. Mm-hmm. So they didn't, you know, we were hoping they would come by and interview people and stuff, and it just didn't happen. And if for some reason people have a very strange attitude toward folk music, even though it's a very broad spectrum of music, and I don't want to get isolated in just singer-songwriters. I'm playing singer-songwriters, but the term folk music, I think David Inge's guest this morning, you know, was much more accurate about this oral tradition. And it's string bands and dance bands, and it's just a wonderfully broad continuum of music, probably one of the broadest spectrums of music. And I never get involved in the argument of what is folk music, because it's just a fool's errand to try to define it, because, yeah, there are some academic definitions, but ultimately it's a very broad spectrum from string bands and mountain music to the singer-songwriters and everything in between. And I think that's what makes it so vital and interesting. And at these conferences, nobody argues about it. You know, so people doing the string band stuff in one corner of the lounge don't mind that in another corner of the building, singer-songwriters are holding forth, and it's just fabulous. And also the varying musicianship of these people. I mean, you see people on fiddles and even a few people dragging a cello around and all kinds of basses, from big, you know, stand-up double basses to electric basses to guitar-type basses. All these different instruments these people are playing. It's just absolutely charming to get up there and see them all doing all this different. And a lot of them are classically trained. I mean, these are not necessarily hicks who just picked up a fiddle. And then some of them are just simply folk fiddlers who learn through the folk tradition. There's all kinds of people. And, of course, there's the Irish and the Celtic influence, and you get a lot of great streams coming in from there. So you get all these different influences mixing, and it makes a very exciting and vital music. And I hate when folk music gets compartmentalized or shoved into a corner. And
Everybody's welcome in the hot tub, right?
Yeah, exactly. With or without clothes. So,
Rich Ward is our guest this afternoon here on The Afternoon Magazine. He's the host of The Midnight Special. It is a program you can hear every Saturday afternoon here on AM 580, beginning at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And the show is syndicated nationally, and it originates, I suppose, the show itself, The Midnight Special, originated at WFMT, and it runs there in Chicago, a slightly different version than the national version. But anyway, The Midnight Special here on AM 580 Saturday afternoons at 2. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions or comments. You're invited to join the discussion. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. No one's waiting, so why don't we take advantage of that fact, and why don't you select something else that we could listen to?
This person, who's in his late 50s, just a lot older than Anais Mitchell, is named Michael Troy. He's from Massachusetts, and here's an interesting story. is that he has been a laborer all his life. He's had three or four careers that always involved, you know, labor. He worked in the mills in Massachusetts when there were still mills in Massachusetts. He's traveled a lot. He's had a very interesting life. He's married, raised a family. And finally, his wife said to him, you know, the kids are gone. Why don't you follow your dream, which is to become a singer, a folk singer? And this is his second CD, and my gosh, he has talent that he's a great poet, and he sings with this very stiff New England accent, which makes him quite different sounding than most people. And this CD, again, I had trouble choosing a song. This song is a biblically based song, but it has some contemporary political overtones.
I lit me a smoke, I was riding my cloud, admiring the trees, riding the breeze. And I looked around and I saw me a town, I couldn't believe what was going down. I saw big white house mansions and little humble shacks. There were people in rags with bags on their backs. Some walked in a straight line and some walked intact. Some wandered way off the track. And I asked my father, how can this be in the land of such promise and home of the free? He said, don't make conclusions and don't be naive. There are givers, and there are takers, and there are thieves. I lowered my cloud for a closer look. I took a robe and some sandals and a history book. And I walked on the beach with curious eyes. I was watching the fish boats go by. I saw men hard at work, drowning in sweat. And there were men on the beaches, mending their nets. But the best dressed were buyers, grooming their tails. I could see that the money was in sales. And I asked my father, how can this be? And he said, what you're thinking ain't what you see. Some are lost, some are found, some will never be pleased. Some are winners, some are snoozers, some are thieves. I took a long, thoughtful walk and a bottle of wine. I was feeling confused, I needed some time. I met a salesman in the desert who could sing like a lark. I said, I'm hungry, he sold me a rock. I said, I needed direction, and he led me to a cliff. He said, show me what you made of, boy, I know you can fly. All this can be yours, as far as you see. I'll do for you, you do for me. And I asked my father, how can this be? Rocks to eat, cliffs to fly, what's he selling me? Can you send me a cloud? I'm in need of relief. I'm in the palm of the hand of the thief. For a while, to take my mind off my dilemma, the hunger and heat, and I noticed in the distance an angel lay a cloud, and that the salesman beat feet. My father approached, and I fell to my knees. I said, thank you for coming, you kept me alive. And we floated away in an angel hay rock, and the thief ran away with the rock.
Very nice.
That's Michael Troy, and he's from Fall River, Massachusetts, and somebody who's been saving up all his life to write songs like that. And there's some great double entendres in there and biblical imagery, and he really gets it, and it's subtle enough that you have to think about what he's saying to realize how contemporary it is as well. And when he performs, it's he's still that mill worker. He's still the real thing. And so you get this great looking guy that just is, looks like he should step out of the mill and into the, onto the stage. It's really quite a talented fellow.
By the way, I wanted to mention that producer Harriet Williamson has listed the CDs that we're playing this afternoon that Rich brought in. I don't think we'll get to all of them by any stretch of the imagination here this afternoon, but they are listed on the schedule. Go to the Afternoon Magazine site, go to the interview section for this week, and there where you see Tuesday Folk Music, Rich Warren, host of the Midnight Special, there's the list of the artists that we're featuring here this afternoon. We've got a couple of listeners getting ready to talk with us this afternoon. Our first caller is on line one in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I noticed on the Midnight Special some weeks ago you played a song by Evelyn Perry about poisoning our lawns, I believe.
Yes.
And I've met her, and I just really think she's really talented. I thought you might just talk a little bit about her, and does she have more than two CDs out, or is it just two?
I only know of two. She's Canadian, and
right.
She's very political, but very clever in the songs she writes, and I really should be playing more of her because she has a lot of things to say. She doesn't mince words, and it's actually I was inspired to play that because I'm a friend of Pat Humphrey's who makes some great music, and Pat said, you got to be playing more of Evelyn's CD. She has important things to say, so I always take recommendations of my folk music friends. And I should go back and play some more from that CD.
Good. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. Let's talk with another listener on the toll-free line, a listener in Indiana. Hi. A caller there on line four.
Hello.
Hi.
This, I think, is a silly question, but it's something I never thought about until this afternoon you're playing your music. I was back in the 60s when I first got involved in the folk group and the musicians and things. I was just wondering... are there any right-wing folk singers out there that possibly, you know, praise war and racism and, you know, all that kind of stuff? Or is it basically, when you use the word political, we all understand that means on the left? Thanks.
Well, I know one fellow in California who is a declared Republican folk singer. He's not particularly right-wing, per se, and his songs really don't deal that much with politics, but he does make himself heard on our listserv on the internet that he does, you know, not subscribe to the left-wing music. Generally, more of the right-wing artists tend to be country performers. And so in that kind of wing of folk music, of the country music, and there's, again, a very strange line that divides folk from country. It's very vague and mm-hmm. You can't really nail it. There are people who are supporting war, and I don't think anybody any longer supports racism on either side of the fence. I think that even right-wing people don't make that a cause. And I haven't heard any singers representing the Ku Klux Klan lately, thank goodness. So, but there are a few out there, not many. And yes, I guess it is a code word when you say political in the folk field. You're meaning left of center. It seems to gravitate that way. I'm not sure where the historical origins are of that. The original ballads did have political commentary. There are a lot of child ballads that collected by Francis Child from the 14th, 15th, 16th century do have some political songs involved with them, commenting on kings and dukes and certain rulers. And there are songs from the Scottish Rebellion, the many rebellions in Scotland that criticize politicians. And there's even a great song called Rigs of the Time, also known as Hard Times, that criticize taxes and war in France. And they say that why is the butter so expensive? Because there's a war on in France and the cows have no grass is one of the lines. So there has been some political strain in traditional music, but I think the left-wing aspect of it came up in the 1930s in the Great Depression more than any other time. And as people like Woody Guthrie and the Almanac Singers, etc., became more prominent, well-known, and by the very repression of McCarthyism, it sort of, as it pushed down, it actually created more of this than there would have been otherwise, probably. And the Kingston Trio was created actually as to sanitize the Weavers. The Weavers were far too political, far too left-wing. So groups like the Kingston Trio were pushed as being neutral and non-political, apolitical groups. And then even suddenly, by the early 60s, they were doing somewhat political songs. And then you got the Chad Mitchell Trio, which was highly political, and Peter, Paul, and Mary. And in fact, I was just at this conference, Noel Stuckey, who's Paul of Peter, Paul, and Mary, was discussing political songs. There was the last closing panel was on political music. And he said, well, you know, Peter, Paul, and Mary, he said, I'm the least political of the trio. He said, I wanted to do more folk music than political music, but Peter and Mary dragged me along, and we got very political. And this is not that I'm against it, but it wasn't my cup of tea, per se. So it's interesting that, yeah, it is a code word for left-wing when you say political music. And I suppose if somebody gave me a really great quality song that praised the current administration or whatever, I'd probably play it. But it has to be a great song. One of the things that angered me during the election campaign, I played a lot of political music on the Midnight Special, not all of it heard on WILL because I sort of censored some of that for the affiliate, the national show. But what angered me is some of the recordings I received were such bad songs. You know, whether or not you like the current president of the administration, if I'm going to play it, it's got to be a great song. I don't want to play a song that bashes a sitting president just because they don't like him. I mean, you can believe some of the dumb music I received. And it just went into the trash, regardless of politics. It's got to be a great song. And if somebody comes up with some great, I wouldn't say right-wing music, but maybe Republican music, I would consider playing it if the song was a good song.
Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to see if Rich knows about the group called The Mammals.
Oh, yeah. I play them all the time in the Midnight Special. In fact, last time I was on with Celeste, I think we played The Mammals. Or maybe it was Scott Alaric when we did a joint show mm-hmm. and we played The Mammals. They are the future of folk music. Groups like that, again, young people in their 20s who are having a great time with traditional folk music and then weaving in their own contemporary. Of course, Ruth Unger is the daughter of Jay Unger and Molly Mason, although her mother is a different person than the Molly Mason. And Michael Miranda and Tal Rodriguez Seeger, who's the grandson of Pete Seeger. So they have a lot of lineage in that group, and they do some terrific music. I mean, the energy level and the musicianship, everywhere they play, they're a big hit.
And that they do seem to be rather political.
Yes, they do. Well, if you have Pete Seeger's grandson performing, and also Michael Miranda is quite political, so they definitely are political. But not all their stuff is political. They do some great straight-ahead traditional music, and they do it extremely well.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. You know, I want to get back to the listener from Indiana who called. You know, last week in a 240 segment, which is a shorter interview, I talked with a woman who was performing. She performed Saturday evening at Pages for All Ages, Barbara Ryman. And her latest CD is a very interesting mix of topics and things. There was a song that she wrote about a woman escaping the Great Famine of Ireland with her children, and it felt like a very old folk song. Like I said to her during the interview, it felt like Barbara Allen, or you know, it had that kind of a storytelling kind of a thing, and it could have been written long ago. And then also, this woman, Barbara Ryman, had been in her day job. She had been a speech therapist for kids, and she wrote a song about a little girl who she'd helped, and I think the song's title is Mara Beth, and it's a beautiful song about this child that was struggling with a great disability because of a brain tumor. And, you know, it's almost a prayer. And, you know, I was just impressed by the spirituality in her song. So, you know, again, we go back to this idea, like the guest this morning on Focus 580 with David talked about, you know, folk music, maybe there are two poles, but in the middle, it's so fluid. And there are so many different ideas that get expressed and issues that get explored and stories that are told.
Absolutely. That's why I love it, because it doesn't get boring, because I can do a three-hour program and play a wide diversity of music, including, of course, we have comedy and the show tunes and the Madness and Escape, mm-hmm. which we might get to a little later. But there is such a wide range. Speaking of spirituality, this next artist I brought, she's sort of the female equivalent of Michael Troy. She's in her mid-late 50s, and she spent most of her – as a young woman, she was in a rock band. And then she got married, raised a family, spent most of her time as a homemaker. And then her husband said, okay, now you can take the family savings and try to make it as a singer-songwriter. And I saw her at the Southwest Conference, and she was really kind of nervous about performing, but she did this one song. And again, I was sitting there in the audience, and my mouth is dropping lower and lower. The poetry of this song, I think, is as good as anything Bob Dylan has written, basically. And it's a very spiritual song. And her name is Phyllis Tanafry. And let's hear this song called Angelina.
There's a tree in the cemetery that was planted long ago by a girl who loved the ferryman who taught her. She saved the sheep on the night the steeple fell. The night the steeple fell. There's a stone wall round the churchyard and a statue of the Lord standing in the shade by the rusty.
Fry from her CD Tomorrow, Angelina.
Yeah, she's from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and that song, it's pretty spiritual and pretty poetic, the imagery and the metaphors. You can spend a few hours thinking about what she's really getting at there. It's, I think, a fascinating song. It really blew me away, and I'm still fascinated by it because it's just so poetic.
Yeah. Now, how long has she been actively on the scene? It looks like some of these songs go back into the late 90s.
Yeah, but she really, you know, it's been about three, four years that she's been back at this. And finally she came to a Folk Alliance conference to kind of, it's like you're coming out to the community. And so you just never know what these people, they've been writing in their closet for years. And I'm not talking about sexual closets. And they finally take the plunge and try to share their music with other people.
And that's why she was maybe a little nervous.
Yeah. And and she's actually a graphic artist. She was actually showing some of the note cards and graphics that she does. And she's a very talented graphic artist, just like Chicago's Bonnie Kolak is really more of a graphic artist than a singer these days. And yet she still does performances because that's where the money is. But she loves going home to her farm in Iowa and weaving tapestries and doing woodblock prints. And she just came out with a book of her woodblock prints that goes along with some of the songs she wrote. So these people are multi-talented, very multi-talented. Maybe we could squeeze in this.
Okay.
You know, the Midnight Special, when I open the show, I say in the description, the folk music and farce, show tunes and satire, madness and escape. Well, I'm not sure whether this falls under farce or madness. But there's a guy in England who spends a lot of time in the U.S. named Les Barker. And his newest CD, all his CDs have a dog in the title because he's madly in love with his dog, whose name was Mrs. Aykroyd, and that's the name of his record label. And this CD is called The War on Terrier, typical of Les. This is a one-minute bit, and you do have to listen carefully to get the punchline, but it's really clever. In 1 minute, here's Les Barker.
It was a cool, calm day in Yarmouth. The channel clear and wide, as the last of the timber sailing ships sailed out on the evening tide. Something happened in the darkness. They searched when it was light, but that fine old timber vessel sank that still and peaceful night. No one knows what passed on that night in 1910. Neither she nor her cargo of woodpeckers was ever seen again.
Oh, that's great.
he's something else. I mean, he also gets very political sometimes, but he has, I mean, his wit is just his plays on language. It's that old Marriott Edgar used to write these things back in the 30s, this kind of style that was performed by Stanley Holloway and others back in the 30s and 40s. And Les sort of picked up on this traditional British humor. It's very British. And the CD has the stealth comma and things like that. I play something on the Midnight Special last week. I'm not sure it's going to make the version of the show that airs on WILL, but it's a piece called Sex is Better Than Poetry. I had to censor it a bit, but it's pretty funny.
Yeah, but, very good. That's funny. And you know what I noticed, too? You know, you kind of clued us in that we'd have to listen for the punchline. But you know what I noticed? That he was standing and saying this in a group of, in a room full of people live, and they recorded it live, and the crowd got quieter as it went on. He just drew them in, didn't he?
Yeah, he's something else. He's a wild guy. He's at every Folk Alliance conference because he thinks of himself as a folk performer. In fact, every third or fourth CD he puts out is actually a musical CD where he collaborates with famous folk singers who help him with music to put music to some of his things. And also, he writes parodies of their songs and they sing them. So you hear these famous artists singing parodies of their own songs that he's written.
That sounds good. Wild. Now, is his name really Barker? A guy who loves dogs, and every CD has the title has something to do with the dog.
I don't know.
Breed?
I never asked. You know, I never realized that. Yeah, that,
I don't.
For
know.
All I know, I have no idea who he really is.
Could
but,
just be, just happen that way.
When Mrs. Aykroyd was alive, when his first dog was alive, her picture used to be on every CD. So, he's probably. I think he is on his second Mrs. Aykroyd now, or third.
Okay, very good. Well, it's good to see you again. Good to see you all revved up after the conference that you went to recently, and hope you'll come back and visit with us again soon.
And if your listeners have any questions, want to ask me anything, simply go to our website at midnightspecial.org, and there's a link right on the splash page to me. That's just goes right to my email box. So midnightspecial.org, have any questions or comments, I'm happy to answer them. I spend a lot of my time answering listener email, so don't hesitate to contact me.
And don't forget, you can hear Rich in the Midnight Special every Saturday afternoon here on AM 580. The show begins at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturdays here on WILL. 9 minutes before 2 o'clock, settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thank you very much, Celeste. From the Chicago Board of Trade this afternoon, things finished the day like this. They were up 4.5 cents in the nearby wheat contract. The December contract at a high of 311, a low at 305.5, and a settlement price at 310.75. Once again, that December wheat futures finished the day 4.5 cents higher. From the March wheat pit, 322.5, the high, the low at 316, settlement price at 322. They were a nickel higher on the day. And the May contract in the wheat pit, 329.5 high, low at 323, settlement price at 328.75. They finished 5.25 higher for the day. July futures, 337, the high, the low at 329, settled 336.5, 6.25 higher. And the September contract up 7 cents, 343.5, the high, the low at 338. Settlement price there at 343.5, and the September wheat finished the day 7 higher. From the corn pit, the nearby December contract, 204 the high, the low at 201.5. Settlement price on this Tuesday up 0.5 cent at 203. March contract in the corn pit had a high today of 215.25, settlement price at 212.75, at 212.75 low, and a settlement price at 214.5, and they were up 0.5 cent. In the May futures in the corn pit, 222.5 high, low at 220.5, settlement price there at 221.75. They finished 0.5 higher as well. July futures, 229, the high, the low, 227, settlement price 228.5, up 0.75, and the September contract, 235.5 high, low at 234, settlement price at 235.25, up 0.75 cents. December futures, 243.5, the high, the low at 241, settlement price at 243.25. They finished the day 1.75 cents higher. From the oat pit, the nearby contract, 0.5 cent higher at the end of the day, settling at 149.5 with a range of 150.75 to 149.25. March oats unchanged for the day, the high 157, low at 155.5, settled at 155.75. And they finished the day once again unchanged. From the soy complex, a little pop near the end of the day after what was termed as mostly a listless day of trade. The January beans did finish the day 4.75 cents higher at 540.5, their high 542 today, a low at 531.25. You might recall that the near-term high in the January beans, or at least on the lead option, I believe, is 548.5. Now the March contract in the bean pit, 545.5, the high, the low at 535.5, and a settlement price at 544.5, and they finished 3 higher. The May futures, 552, the high, the low at 542, settlement price at 551.5, up 5.25. January complex, January beans, 560 in the bean complex, 548.5, the low, settlement price at 558 for the January beans, or July beans, and they were up 6 cents. Let me go through those again. July soybeans, 560, the high, the low at 548.5, settlement price at 558, and they were up 6. August soybeans, 563 the high, the low, and the settlement price, all at 563 for the August beans of next year, up 8 cents for the day. Bean meal now, 156.50 the high in the nearby December contract, the low at 152.30, settled 156.40, they were up 270. And the January bean meal, 157.30 high, low at 153.40, settled 157.30, they were up 260 on the day. December bean oil, 21.57 the high, the low at 20.96, settled 21.25, they were down 26. And the January beans, or bean oil, that is, 21.68 the high, the low at 21.10, settled $21.39, and they were off 22 cents. Now here with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange is Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, Todd. It was a mostly lower day today on the Mercantile Exchange for livestock prices. However, the feeder contracts finished higher today. Let's see. November feeder cattle. There we go. 108.30, the high. 108.17.5, the low. The settlement, 108.27.5. That up 7.5. January feeder cattle, 103.65, the high. 103.15, the low. 103.20, the settlement, that up 35. March feeder cattle, 98.70, the high, 98.20, the low, 98.40, the settlement, that up 22.5. December live cattle, the high today, 86.75, the low, 86.05, the settlement, 86.10, down 37.5. February live cattle, 88.40, the high, 87.75, the low, 87.92.5, the settlement, that down 42.5. December lean hogs, 75.75, the high, 73.95, the low, 74.37.5, the settlement, that down 40. February lean hogs, 75.10, the high, 73.05, the low, 73.30, the settlement, that down 77.5. April, 71.95, the high, 70.30, the low, 70.55, the settlement, that down 60. May, 70.75 the high, 69.10 the low, 69.17 and a half the settlement, that finishing down 37 and a half. And February bellies, 102.35 the high, the low, $100.60, the settlement, $100.65, that finishing down a quarter. And the Dow is down 60 points at 10,490, the NASDAQ is off 16 points at 2,078, and the S&P 500 is down 8 at 1,176.
Programming on WILL AM is made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, where world music traditions come alive in performances by Latin American singer Tanya Libertad, the Irish ensemble Kennedy's Kitchen, and Scottish fiddler Bonnie Rideout. For more information, visit KrannertCenter.com.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Juliet Kaufman from Iowa City, Iowa writes, "Dear Dr. Science, today I looked in my appointment book and found that I had to be in two places at once. Does this ever happen to you?"
Usually at least twice a day. Bilocation's a simple matter once you've laid the temporal groundwork. Of course, nowadays, having a split personality is not unusual, but knowing how to send each half to a different location, conduct business, and then reconvene to compare notes, well, that takes some doing. I've never had a problem fragmenting my personality, but it wasn't until I discovered crazy glue that I was able to achieve integration again. Now I can be two places at once if my appointments call for it, or just plain old me back at the lab. Isn't that right, Doctor? You bet.
Thank you, Dr. Science. Send your science questions to Ask Dr. Science. Remember, he's not a real doctor.
I have a master's degree
in science.
Produced by Ducks Breath and distributed by PRI, Public Radio International. To order the Dr. Science Get Smart Kit with new CD screensaver for PCs and a master's degree mouse pad, $21.95, call 800-989-DUCK.
Today's programming is made possible in part by Ratio Severance Reed Architects, Designers, and Planners, dedicated to distinctive projects for higher education, lifestyle,